What kind of music is it? General, cross genres, that kind of thing. And then who is it for and what do you want them to experience? You know, when I was really just in the glam space, I was saying operatic glam rock for the oddballs and outcasts. Because what I was saying is, this is the kind of music that we have, that I have. This is what makes it different from general rock and general glam rock, even. Like, it has a sort of specific tune to it. And then beyond that, like, who's it for? What does it make them feel? And I felt saying for the oddballs and outcasts made it very clear, like, this is for people who don't feel that they belong to have a place where they belong.
It's easy to get lost in today's music industry with constantly changing technology and where anyone with a computer can release their own music. But I'm going to share with you why this is the best time to be an independent musician, and it's only getting better. If you have high quality music, but you just don't know the best way to promote yourself so that you can reach the right people and generate a sustainable income with your music, we're going to show you the best strategies that we're using right now to reach millions of new listeners every month without spending 10 hours a day on social media. We're creating a revolution in today's music industry, and this is your invitation to join me. I'm your host, Michael Walker. All right, excited to be here today back with the one and only Savannah Pope. So Savannah has been on the podcast before. She has done a very impressive crowdfunding campaign that raised, what was the exact figure that you had raised, Savannah?
62 and some change, 62K and some change. I can't remember.
Yeah, 62 cents. 62 cents.
62 cents, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah. $60,000. Just amazing. And she was on the podcast earlier where she actually shared a breakdown of that campaign. Today, I'm really excited to talk to her a little bit more about artist identity and branding and kind of finding your voice. And particularly, you know, in today's day and age with social media and with the expectations, you know, for a lot of us, I've, you know, felt pressure before in terms of anxiety, in terms of like showing up and having our voice be heard. And, you know, and I know that all of us as artists, that's one of the biggest challenges that we really have to face, sort of the pressure and the anxiety and putting ourselves out there and finding out what is it that makes us unique. Mm-hmm. So I'm really looking forward to connecting today. And Savannah, thank you so much for being on the podcast again and for being you.
Thank you. I'm psyched to be back.
Awesome. So to kick things off, I would love to just do a quick intro for anyone that maybe missed the first podcast or this first time meeting or connecting with you. Could you share just a little bit about yourself and your music and what you're working on right now?
Yeah. My name is Savannah Pope. I am a singer, songwriter, performer, video artist. I do all sorts of things in service of the music. And I am based in LA. And at the moment, I am essentially, the last time we spoke was about getting the money for the crowdfund. And I've spent the last, 2 years basically working on creating that album, coming up with a release plan, you know, all of the logistical aspects and all of the creative aspects, doing the music videos for it. So I have the first song and music video from the album, which is called, it's going to be called Pandemonium. It's produced by Sean Bevan, who big hit maker, you know, Nine Inch Nails and No Doubt and Three Teeth. And
don't speak, knows what you're saying. Don't tell me, guys, it hurts. Oh man,
don't tell me, guys, it hurts.
There you go. You actually kind of sound like Gwen Stefani there when you did it. I don't know what I sounded like. Farmer Facebook, it's a good. Oh man. That's awesome. Gosh, what was that experience like working with him as a producer?
That was really cool. I, you know, we got really close, and he and his wife sort of became like my surrogate parents, because a lot of this, you know, kind of came, it's like right after the pandemic peak. So, you know, I went up there and he has this studio up in the mountains, and I would just kind of go up there for like a week at a time. Or a couple weeks at a time, and just work really hard on this record. So it was a very cool experience. How I actually got hooked up with him was really bizarre and hilarious. I was working on the first song that I wrote for the album, Pandemonium, which is the name of the album, the titular song. And it's this like 7-minute operatic aria influenced rock opera, basically, with a ton of different elements. And it's got pop, it's got rock, it's got little bits of prog. It's also in like 6 languages, the backing vocals in a bunch of different languages. So this is sort of my opus, and I was just singing it with some directions into my phone while I was writing it. And my manager at the time sent it to Sean Bevan, who's like this illustrious producer. And I was so embarrassed. I'm like, how could you share my dinky voice memo? <producer? laughs> What are you doing? But he really liked it. And he said, you know, that's what you sound like on a, you know, unpolished phone recording, then let's do this. So we started out with that song and then just kind of developed this great working relationship. And that's been really cool.
Mm. Wow. That's awesome. How many songs are you recording with them?
Let's see. We worked on, there's 11 on the album. And then there's also a 12th track, which it's not musical. It's just my thank you track for people who like contributed at a certain level and, you know, were really involved in the crowdfund. So, yeah.
Super cool. Was this your first time recording with a producer of that, like that caliber? And if so, I'm curious to hear your perspective now, sort of having this experience working with a true master at their craft. Do you have any insights as it relates to all of us in terms of our own music production journey?
You know, one of the things that I have found is that when I meet people who are really good, they don't front very much. You know what I mean? Like I've definitely met a lot of sort of mid-level people who neg you and try to neg you into wanting to work with them, which I think is just such a crappy tactic. And I didn't get any of that from Sean. Sean was very much like, I really like your vision. This is about facilitating that. And to the point where he was like, let's call you a co-producer on that, on this, because you're super involved in the production process. And, you know, like he was just very, he had a lot of humility and it was really in service of the work more than anything. That was a very, very cool experience. My former, engineer and producer, all very, very good friends with him and he's phenomenal. Yeah. Obviously Sean's like a legend. So it was a bit intimidating going into it for sure. Especially staying at his house. I was like, I better be on my best behavior and like replace their soap or something.
Awesome. Yeah, that's interesting. Seeing how success like impacts different people differently. But you know, the point that you brought up around, when you say negging, like, could you describe that in a little bit more detail? Because I think this is actually a really valuable thing to call out for all of us, even like ourselves internally. Like, where does that come from? That, you know, maybe a sense of like jealousy or wanting to downplay other people. Like, it's sort of this like toxic sense of scarcity, or it's almost like an anti-success mindset that you hurts both parties. You know, when we do that versus truly wanting other people to be successful. So I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about when you talk about negging.
Well, in the specific case that I'm talking about, I've definitely had meetings with people before where they were just, their attitude was very different. It was incredibly smug. And it was like, everything you've done is wrong. You're doing everything wrong. Like, I can fix you, basically. And that's a very different approach than being like, I can make this voice really genuine and good. Yeah.
And there's some powerful stuff in there. Like, I can fix you versus you don't need to be fixed. And let's, you know, lean into what makes you special or what gives you character. It was probably a good segue to this new topic, kind of idea in general of finding your voice as an artist, or, you know, figuring out what that character is, what your artist identity is. I'd love to hear your perspective on what your journey has been like, you sort of discovering that for yourself. And I know you've worked with other artists now, with, you know, with Bonnie Musician as well, and kind of helped them with their artist identity.
Yeah. I mean, I was more in the fan magnet department, but I've always sort of gravitated towards artist identity, as you know.
Did we do a fan magnet session together, Savannah? I feel like at one point I went through the program and you gave me some really great tips on artist identity. Maybe it was related to the ads, but it was an artist identity thing.
I know. Yeah. I feel like that's kind of where I live more than anything. So God, my journey with artist identity. Wow. That's a really good question. I guess what I would start with is it's always changing. It's always changing. And that's something that's important to respect, you know, and change is so scary. And being an artist is already so scary that can be a difficult thing but I feel like the most successful and best artists really embrace that change and, you know, the shifts in their personas and careers, really, really well. So I tried to be adaptable in terms of what I'm feeling. Like for a long time, I was very much just a glam rock artist. And now with this album, and I didn't plan on it, there's just a ton of dark pop and indie pop and a lot of different elements coming up in it. So, you know, update my artist bio, talk about different subjects, you know, reach out to different kinds of fans, and allowing myself to evolve with that, I think has been really important, rather than being like, oh, I can only be one thing. And so that's where I would start, is that it's always changing. That being said, I think like coming up with a sort of mission statement, and this is what I always told people when I was sneakily doing artist identity sessions in my fan sessions, is when we were coming up with a tagline for their ads. The thing that always was the most effective for me was not to be like, you know, if your music is like, if you like this person like that, I know it works really well for a lot of people. It's just, I think for my brand, it didn't click. So for me, what worked the best and what I always tried to help facilitate for people if they were interested was, you know, what makes this yours? And that is, what kind of music is it? You know, a general cross genres, that kind of thing. And then who is it for and what do you want them to experience? So, you know, what is it going to make them experience? Because music is, to me, like, I can't remember who said this, but music is sounds the way that we feel, right? That's why it's so attractive to us. And it facilitates the processing of information and trauma and all of that. So I think having that be an important part of your artist identity is great. So my initial, you know, when I was really, really just in the glam space, I was saying operatic glam rock for the oddballs and outcasts. And, you know, I think because what I was saying is, this is the kind of music that I have, this is what makes it different from general rock and general glam rock, even like it has a sort of specific tune to it. And then beyond that, like, who's it for? What does it make them feel? And I felt saying for the oddballs and outcasts made it very clear, like, this is for people who don't feel that they belong to have a place where they belong.
Love it. Yeah. I mean, those questions are really kind of the core of any sort of product or any sort of service that you create, sort of like identifying who is this for and what's the transformation or what's the impact, what's the result, what am I doing for them? So it makes sense to really lean into that in terms of figuring out your purpose of, yeah, who your music is for, what it's for. I'm curious, for someone who maybe isn't totally clear on that and they're wondering, like, I don't know, like, who my music is for. I don't know how to express it in the right way. Do you have any tips to kind of look within and kind of help them to start pulling out the strings of maybe what their mission is with their music, or how they want to, what kind of impact that they want to make with it?
Sure. I would say, I would say start by asking yourself, what do you want to feel when you listen to music? Because we generally make music that we would want other people to hear, which is really what we want to hear. So I would just start being like, asking yourself, what do you want to feel when you listen to music? What do you want to experience? And what does it do for you? That's where I would start.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that. So sort of like looking within and figuring out for you personally, what do you want to hear? What do you want to feel? What do you want to experience? And starting that. And do you see that as like a place that you draw inspiration from when it comes to writing the songs as well?
Yeah. And you know what? Shameless plug. Also, feel free to put this at the front of the episode. My first single from the album, Melancholic Goddess, along with the music video, which I am just ravenously proud of, come out on Friday, which as of today is 3 days away, February 23rd. And so if you want to support, check it out. Would love to have you. Would love to have you in the Creature family. And
we're cutting that out. No allowed. No one can go listen to Savannah's music. No one's ever allowed. Super secret, off limits. Yeah. I'm saying that so that everyone really wants to go do it.
yes, there's in particular, there's several songs on the album. So every song in a way was something. Sometimes I write and it's just me processing like how I sort of work through my own issues. I have to, write it down and put it outside of myself and turn it into music in a way. And it almost like anthropomorphizes it. And then I can deal with it. But also I am oftentimes writing for what I want to hear. So there's a song on the record called Live Your Strange. And that is it's a really vulnerable song. It was scary to write. And it's like an anthem for people who feel unlovable and like there's just something wrong with them that can't be accepted. And I'm getting emotional. I did not expect this. what I'm saying in the song, Michael, you drew this out of me. What I'm saying in the song is that what you feel is most broken about you is lovable. And there's a place for you, and I'm creating that, and I want you to be there with me. And I think the reason that was so important for me to write was because I never heard that when I was a kid. Especially around like 14, 15, I had a rough adolescence. And God, I just needed to know that there was a place for me that where I wasn't scary, where I wasn't too much, where I wasn't wrong, that there was a place for me. So yeah, I think, and that's maybe one of the most powerful. God, they're all really powerful. I mean, Pandemonium itself, the song is about, I wrote, after a friend took their life and I realized like, it's when we can't talk about this stuff that it eats us alive. And so that was sort of my way to be like, I'm going to kind of talk about all this generational trauma, all of this shame, all of the things that have made me not want to share this part of myself and like put it out there raw and make it as epic and weird and fucked up as it is in my head, and wild as it is in my head. Mm. And then Melancholic Goddess is another great example. It was a very different direction for me. I love this song so much. It's actually the only time this has ever happened to me. I woke up in the middle of the night and I had a poem in my head and I wrote it down in an absolute frenzy. And I was like, this says so many things that I've wanted to say for years. And it just says it all. And then I went in, I came up with a melody for it. And then I went in with Sean and we were just like, it was really like being a kid. I've never gotten to do this in the studio, so this was great. I was like, I don't want real drums. I don't want guitar. I want to just make this as raw as it is. And because it's really, that song's a lot about sexism and kind of the trauma of that and a lot of my adolescent trauma, familial trauma, and this experience of trying to overcome trauma and feel powerful, but at the same time, you really want to feel loved, and they can feel conflicting in a way, especially as a woman, because of sort of the way that we're supposed to present ourselves. So it was kind of my way of presenting, of embracing my power, and then also putting all the vulnerability out there at the same time. So it's like a total juxtaposition. So in order to do that, I was like, let's make it completely raw. Like, it's just me banging on stuff and stomping on things. And it was really cathartic. And then me and the women that were staying there, we just like went in the booth and we made crazy primal sounds with our mouths. And you know, I mean, it was like really cathartic. It was like, you know, the feminine spirit is in us. And that was really cool. And I think, again, like that's probably what I needed to say and also what I needed to hear, which is that like I'm powerful and vulnerable and those are both existing at the same time. Yeah.
Holy cow. I'm so excited to listen to this album.
Thank you.
Just proud of you for the courage and the willingness to share that. Like, you know, it sounds like you've done some real digging and being willing to kind of bring up that stuff and share it and be vulnerable is, you know, yeah, scary.
And to be honest, I mean, like I told you at the beginning of this call, I was like, I was scared to even come on this call because I've got this song coming out and it's so raw to me, all of this stuff that I've been in so much anxiety. Like I, you know, this has been some of the most anxiety I've ever experienced. And I'm sure some of it is excitement, but, you know, because I love this stuff and I'm really proud of it. But yeah, it's really interesting. It shows me that it's really important that I talked about this stuff on the record, you know, because it's real and it faces us all the time. And, it's been a very raw, scary, but also like kind of beautiful and expanding experience overall, I think.
I would love to hear you talk a little bit about the connection between vulnerability and music and being willing to share that. Yeah, I think for a lot of us, we're afraid of being fully seen or sharing. You mentioned, gosh, I love that. Was it Live Your Strange?
Mm-hmm.
That idea for a song and just that, the heart behind that, I could just sense it. Like from you describing it, like I connected with that. So I can only imagine like listening to the song, what I'm going to feel.
Mm.
But yeah, there's something to that. That idea that the things that we feel like are broken about us, the things that we're so scared of revealing or being seen in a lot of cases can actually be a part of what makes us unique and beautiful. And being willing to share that, I know for a lot of people is extremely challenging. So what would your advice be for artists who are maybe wrestling with that same thing where they're feeling like, oh man, like this feels really vulnerable. Like I'm scared of talking about this or sharing this or giving a voice to this. And is there a time when like maybe there are things that shouldn't, like, you know, you shouldn't share it, like you're sharing, like oversharing, or right. Is that just, you know, is that a false limitation? And how do you distinguish between that?
All really good questions. And, you know, the honest answer is I'm still figuring all that out. You know, we all are. It's especially in an age of social media where everything's so immediate and, you know, you can basically just put all of yourself out on a slab. It's definitely possible to overshare. And it's also, I think, important. Well, look, everyone's going to be different. Like if it doesn't, some people, they just put it into the music. And that's how they're vulnerable. And if they can't talk about it, then I totally understand. For me, I'm like, I've just never been good at compartmentalizing. I just am not a person who can do that. Like, I would be a terrible man in the 50s. I couldn't, like, have a mistress. You know what I mean? I just, yeah. So I think, yeah, for me, it works. And that being said, it's like, it's a tricky line. You know, you're always sort of playing with it and seeing what you're comfortable with, you know, seeing what makes sense for you. But there are certain things that are precious to me that I don't talk about, or I don't talk about until I'm ready and I get to like control that narrative. That's actually a powerful thing about, personal information, is getting to choose when and where you say it. So for instance, like making an album about it, I was really scared to talk about all of this stuff, but in a way I'm kind of controlling the situation. You know, it's not like someone's being like, hey, she's mentally ill. You know, I get to be like, yeah, I deal with mental illness. And like, here's the complexity around that and the nuance. And, you know, there's definitely some empowerment in that process. But there's also things like, you know, a ton of different things that people wouldn't be comfortable sharing or wouldn't be comfortable sharing at that time. And I respect that. I mean, I have plenty of things that I'm like, this is, you know, eventually I might rule this out, but I don't know. I don't know how to frame it yet. I don't know how to own it yet. So I haven't, you know?
Yeah, totally makes sense. That was a very honest answer too, sort of acknowledging this is, you know, an evolving process. And I mean, it's kind of like what you mentioned with the artist identity too, just sort of recognizing that who you are isn't something that's set in stone and we're changing, we're evolving over time.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as it relates to going deeper into this idea of using music as a vessel, as like almost like a healing modality that you can use to kind of process through your own emotions. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us as artists, even if we don't think about it that way or use it that way, like healing is actually a really good word for it. Like we're sort of connecting with our source or who we are, or that kind of that universal intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, from your experience, getting in touch with that and, you know, using music as, you know, as a healing modality, while respecting, you know, that everyone has a right to their own, you know, narrative and kind of sharing when the time is right. Is that something that you would encourage artists to kind of like lean into for themselves, is, you know, at the very least, like expressing that music like to themselves without necessarily sharing it? Or what's your relationship with, yeah, as songwriting, like, in, once you start to tap into that artist identity, how do you recommend the artists find the gold within themselves? Because in a lot of cases, like, it is that stuff. Like, it's the scary stuff. It's the stuff that, like, it's juicy. It's like juicy, and like that actually, it's like a slingshot. Like, there actually is a lot of value if and when you're ready to face it and sort of use it as like a healing tool. So I'm curious what you'd recommend for artists to, you know, be able to channel that.
Yeah. Well, this is probably going to sound a little judgmental, but the answer, in my opinion, is to be a good songwriter. And and to learn how to become a good songwriter. If you're not there yet. And to me, and obviously there are going to be different definitions for different people, but to me, what makes a great songwriter is someone who can, show, not tell. So there are plenty of lyrics that I have. I spend a lot of time on my lyrics. My lyrics are very important to me. And there are plenty of lyrics I have, even on this album, there's Easter eggs in there that people wouldn't know. And it's not stuff that I'm ready to talk about yet, but it addresses it. It addresses it, and it lets me process it, because what we're dealing with is allegory. And, you know, my favorite literary genre is magical realism. And that's because you get the sense of, this is just life. This is the way it is. But you also get to process things that otherwise would sort of be completely unpalatable, by putting a level of fantasy in that. So, you know, for instance, here's a great example. There's a book called Tropic of Orange. It's not like a super well-known book. It's a great magical realism book based in LA though. And there's a part in it, and this, it slowly gets more and more bizarre, but mostly it feels like it's very grounded in reality. And there's a part in it where there's a sexual assault, but it's all told in terms of like these sort of ancient, because it takes place in Mexico. This part takes place in Mexico, these sort of like ancient Mexican gods. But like one is, you know, like a very phallic representation. The other one's like a jaguar, like, you know, it's, you wouldn't necessarily know exactly, but once you like it, totally captures the feeling of it, and you're able, like, you read the passage, and it's definitely a disturbing passage, but it's removed from reality enough that you don't know until you get to the end of it and like understand the emotions that you just went through, that just helped you process this thing that otherwise, if you just stated it plainly, it might be too much.
Super interesting. Yeah, like showing, not telling, and actually getting in touch. You know, it's sort of like that. It is possible to disconnect from our feelings and to think about something or talk about it or process it without actually really connecting with it. And so it sounds like, you know, part of what you're suggesting is that if you can really kind of step back into your craft and use, you know, your songs as a way to channel how you're feeling, then that can be a way that you can even like in some ways be more truly express the trauma or to truly express the feeling without even necessarily having to say exactly this is what happened. You know, if you're not ready to talk about it or share a story, you can still use that as a healing experience that resonates and, you know, expresses that that feeling, but in a way that's maybe more safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also a way that is healing, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I have a couple of friends who've done like certain kinds of trauma therapy, and they've told me like, they take like a beta blocker beforehand so that you don't re-traumatize yourself when you're talking about certain things. And to me, it's kind of like that. It's like that level of allegory is the beta blocker. It just removes it just enough that I can like face it and talk about it. And, but there's, you know, a little bit of safety, because part of the healing is, you know, like I said earlier, is getting to frame the narrative in a way that works for you.
Awesome. Well, Savannah, thank you for coming on here and being, you know, brave enough to like, to share, you know, your truth of what you're experiencing right now. I think it's a very normal thing with like such a, you know, an amount of love and detail and energy that you've put into this, you know, and now you're getting ready to share this, you know, this song that's coming out on Friday, which I can't wait to listen to the full album. So thank you for having the courage to really kind of step into who you are and share your voice. And
thank you.
For anyone,
you for
that
driving with me on your podcast.
it does not happen very often, but when I experience like such a authentic, you know, and I just feel your heart. And it's such a beautiful concept for the song too. I think, yeah, I personally can relate with that. I think all of us can relate with that. But what came to mind was like Steve Jobs talking about think different. You think different, and the square pegs not fitting in the round holes. But I think there's a universal truth to that idea that, like, you know, the things, like, we have this opportunity to express ourselves in a unique way that's different. And living your strange, it was just a beautiful way to articulate that. And I'm starting to ramble here, so I'm going to pull myself back. But I'm really excited to listen to the songs. And
thank you.
For anyone that's listening to this right now, who's also interested in checking out the music, what would be the best place for them to go to listen to the songs, check it out, and to support you as an artist?
Yeah, I would say for listening, you know, follow me on Spotify or Apple Music, your favorite listening streaming service. It's always better to like follow an artist there than just like add a song, because then you get the new stuff coming in. And it's like, it's, I just think it's a much better way to experience music. And it's helpful for the artist too, because then they get to share more with you. And then I'm probably most active social media wise on Instagram. My handle there is I am Savannah Pope. Savannah, like the city in Georgia, Pope, like the dude in the Vatican. Even though I'm Jewish, I don't know what's going on. and then, you know, I really love my email list. I can be a little old school, but email lists are a fantastic way to like be in touch with fans and keep them, like get them things that other people, kind of have them be a part of a community that's not as public as social media and all of that. So if you go to my website, which is savannahpopemusic.com, there's a sign up form for my email list. And that's always a great way to kind of get into the community and become a part of the, you know, of the family. I respond to all my emails and messages and everything. So.
Amazing. Well, Savannah, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for coming on and sharing, you know, the excitement and sort of the feelings that are happening leading up to this release. And I can just tell how much energy and love you've put into it. And I can imagine how exciting and scary, you know, kind of the feeling is right when it's getting ready to go out. So I'm personally here for you. All of us are here for you, cheering you on. And if there's anything that we can do here or the team can do here to support you in your release, just reach out and let us know. And I would highly encourage anyone that hasn't yet to go check out Savannah's music, because it's amazing. And it's certainly the authenticity and like the uniqueness, your voice, like really like cuts through. And so I appreciate you being a part of our family, being a part of our community, and sharing your story here.
I'm so happy to be a part of the family. Thank you so much, Michael.
Yeah! Hey, it's Michael here. I hope that you got a ton of value out of this episode. Make sure to check out the show notes to learn more about our guest today. And if you want to support the podcast, then there's a few ways to help us grow. First, if you hit subscribe, then that'll make sure you don't miss a new episode. Secondly, if you share it with your friends or on your social media and tag us, that really helps us out. And third, best of all, if you leave us an honest review, it's going to help us reach more musicians like you who want to take their music careers to the next level. The time to be a modern musician is now, and I look forward to seeing you on our next episode.